The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Is clear comprehension. And I so enjoyed that theme last week that I thought I would carry it into my teachings this week. So this term, the term clear comprehension, is kind of a funny term, clear comprehension. It's translating the Pali term sampajanya, which is translated in several different ways. The term sampajanya has two parts to it. The second part, pajanya, is related to pajanati, which basically means to know. And the first part, sam, of the sampajanya, basically is an intensifier. So it's kind of like know bolded, you know, really knows, or clearly knows, or fully knows. So the term sampajanya is translated as clear comprehension, clear knowing, full awareness, full alertness, those kinds of terms. And it is used in conjunction with mindfulness in the Buddha's teaching on mindfulness practice. The main teaching that the Buddha offered on mindfulness practice, the Satipatthana Sutta, talks at the very beginning of that text on establishing mindfulness. How do we establish mindfulness? And he talks about three qualities that need to come together to establish mindfulness. Ardency is one of them, kind of a sense of heartfelt connection, a making effort, a sense of engagement. Full awareness is the second, and mindfulness is the third. So the mindfulness is not in this instructions on establishing mindfulness. Mindfulness isn't held out as a separate quality, that, you know, just cultivate mindfulness. It's mindfulness in combination with these other factors. The mindfulness itself is the aspect of, we could just say, bare attention, of knowing what's happening in the present moment, of remembering the present moment, of being aware in the present moment. The ardency, as I said, brings a sense of effort, engagement. The full awareness, clear comprehension, brings a depth and a breadth to establishing mindfulness that I think is very interesting. There's a number of places in the text that this term is used, and the way that that term is used in these various areas in the text begin to draw out some of the meaning of what this full awareness is. I'm not going to give you all of those references or go through all of those texts, but I'm just going to give you some of the flavor of the meanings that are pulled out in the various areas. So there's one place where the Buddha talks about someone engaging deliberately, and that the term translated as deliberate there is being aware, being fully aware of what you're doing while you're doing it. So there's a sense of deliberately doing something, so having a quality of deliberateness to it, to our practice. Another aspect of the term is found in a place where the Buddha talks about intention. We intend to do things. And he says we can intend to make actions in our body either with or without this quality of clear comprehension. So that's an interesting thing to recognize, that when we do something with our body, and he goes on, it's not just the body he talks about. He says with our body, our speech, our mind, we take actions intentionally. We make actions with intention. But that intention can be either, we can either be fully aware of that intention or not fully aware of that intention. And to me, this brings in the notion or the understanding, you know, that a lot of our activities, when we're not aware of what's happening, we're kind of guided by our habits. Our habits make our decisions for us. There's intention there. That intention is coming based on our conditioning. And we're not often fully aware of what we're doing. So this brings in this aspect of understanding the intention when we are fully aware. So this is I think, a key piece, this recognizing what our intentions are. So full awareness brings in that aspect. Another piece that the full awareness brings in is recognizing what is helpful for us in terms of freeing us from suffering and what is not so helpful for us. So it not in a judgmental way, but to recognize, for instance, it says when anger is present, one is fully aware that anger is present. And when anger is not present, one is fully aware that anger is not present. So it brings in also this kind of non-judgmental quality to our awareness. This full awareness brings in a non-judgmental quality. And also this passage is beginning to imply an understanding around what's helpful for us as we begin to be fully aware of anger. We begin to recognize the suffering of it. As we begin to be fully aware of non-anger, we begin to recognize the freedom that's present in that. Another aspect of full awareness that's drawn out in some of these places in the text is understanding the context in which we're doing things. So it's not just being kind of aware in bare awareness of just things kind of going on, but it is understanding the context in which we are aware. So understanding causes and conditions, understanding what might be helpful for me in my practice given the conditions that I'm in, given the state of my mind. So there's a lot of depth that's brought to mindfulness through this quality of clear comprehension. The commentaries go through the teachings on clear comprehension. I like to think that probably they made an exploration of the use of the term that the way the Buddha used it, and then kind of drew out some of these meanings. And the commentaries came up with four of these threads, four particular aspects of clear comprehension. They say that clear comprehension has these four threads, four supports it brings to our practice. Clear comprehension of purpose, clear comprehension of suitability, clear comprehension of domain, which I'll describe in a moment, and clear comprehension of reality, or clear comprehension of non-delusion. So this is not a teaching the Buddha did not teach this, but the way I think the commentaries understood this was to look at these various threads, these various ways the Buddha used the term, and began to draw out these meanings about purpose, suitability, domain, and reality. So I'd like to explore these four with you a little bit, in particular in terms of how they relate to our practice in everyday life. So clear comprehension of purpose. Purpose, you know, the word has a sense of direction, of engagement, of perhaps of aspiration, of intention. this aspect of clear comprehension is asking us to look at what is the direction of our life. How would we like our lives to be aimed? So what is the aim? What is the purpose of our life? What is our highest aspiration? How would we like to live our lives? We can have many purposes for living life, and we can have the purpose to earn a lot of money, to have a good relationship, maybe to have a big house or a nice car. Those kinds of purposes may make us happy in some ways, but the kind of purpose that this clear comprehension is asking us to look at is, what is it that we, what will really serve to make us more deeply happy? How can we engage so that we can touch into something more meaningful to us? I think so many of us find the just, you know, going to work, making money, it just feels like this rat in a cage, you know? It's like you're just making money to buy things so that you can make more money, so you can buy more things. And it's just like, is this what it's about? You know, we have that sense, is this what it's about? And so clear comprehension of purpose is asking us to evaluate, to look at what is a more deep intention or a deep priority for us. And so we can make this as a reflection for us. The Buddhist teachings suggest that priorities or purposes that are meaningful are the purposes that support our cultivating beautiful qualities of mind, like love, compassion, mindfulness, peace, balance of mind, equanimity, joy, many beautiful qualities that are, the Buddha suggests, are supportive of our deeper purpose, our deeper aspiration. He also suggests it's helpful to have the aim or the purpose to let go of unskillful, unwholesome qualities, to let go of acting out of greed, out of aversion, out of delusion. So these paired kind of purposes lead us to a peacefulness and a meaningfulness. It's not simply peace floating off in a cloud somewhere. It's a peacefulness that is connected to our daily lives, and an open-heartedness that doesn't just simply allow us to kind of float through life being untouched by things, but it's an open-heartedness that connects us very meaningfully with the world, that kind of draws out of us in an engagement with supporting, helping, serving as we engage in our own hearts and begin to see the ways that we struggle, the ways that our own reactivity leads to suffering in our minds. We begin to recognize this is not just about us. You know, it's not just me that has this issue of being reactive to things and getting angry and getting frustrated. It's not just me. We see that these processes at work in our mind are universal processes, and what's happening in this mind is multiplied by 7 billion. How much suffering in the world? And we begin to have a sense of compassion for that suffering. So this gives us this sense of purpose to open our hearts, to support helping others to be as peaceful as they can be also. So this purpose, the Buddha asks us to reflect on our purpose. in our daily lives, this purpose can manifest in so many ways. You know, if we take some moments, I mean, just sitting here reflecting, you know, what is your deepest purpose? What is your highest aspiration? What do you feel draws you from the depths of your heart? What draws you to towards living meaningfully? What is it? What is a meaningful life for you? How might your life be meaningful? And in reflecting on that meaningfulness of life, the next aspect of clear comprehension is what's suitable for us? How do we live our lives in a suitable way such that we can meet that purpose? So this is clear comprehension of suitability. It may seem that, you know, if we find we have a deep aspiration of service or love or compassion or letting go, freedom, peacefulness, ease, so many different ways it might express itself. Are the activities that we're engaging with supportive of that purpose? This is suitability. And on the surface of it, perhaps, it might seem like a lot of what we do may not be so directly related to our purpose. And there may be some ways in which we engage in the world that are clearly counter to our purpose. You know, when we get reactive and argue with somebody, lash out in hostility or cruelty, that may not be serving our deepest purpose. Probably not serving our deepest purpose. But there's so many things that we do in our day that maybe just seem like really neutral things, things we just have to do. We have to go to work, we have to go to the grocery store and buy our food, we have to get in the car and drive on the freeway, we have to get up and make our breakfast, all of these things we have to do. How do these things serve our highest purpose? This is a very helpful reflection to make. These things can be understood as serving our purpose, our highest purpose. Some of them can be understood as serving our highest purpose if we take the time to look at them. So, for example, peacefulness may be a purpose, and driving down the freeway is your action. How do you connect this action with that purpose? It's actually pretty straightforward. Drive peacefully. Bring that in. You know, the teaching here to me in daily life is keep in touch with your purpose and see if it can inform your actions, even your simplest actions. Can your purpose inform even the simplest actions of your day? It takes a kind of a reflection, perhaps, to make this connection. But it's worth it. It's worth that exploration. Because it's what happens, what seems to happen is when we make that connection. So we're driving down the freeway. We recognize or remember, okay, my purpose is peacefulness. Can I connect that to this activity? Can I connect that to driving? Okay, let me see if I can engage with driving peacefully. Remembering that purpose, engaging in that activity in that way, begins to cultivate peacefulness. Our intention gets oriented around our purpose, and it supports that quality, cultivating that quality in our mind. The Buddha talked about this in a simple way. I think it's a beautiful analogy, a beautiful image. He was talking to his monks about rinsing out their bowl, rinsing out their alms bowl after their meal. And he said that even if, you know, once you're rinsing out that alms bowl, you know, there's some little scraps of food floating in the water that they've rinsed the bowl with, and they're probably just going to throw that water onto the ground. And you could do that. You could just throw the water onto the ground and kind of walk away without thinking about it. But the Buddha suggested that his monks reflect while throwing out that rinse water. May the beings in this area be nourished by that food, cultivating generosity of heart. It takes that intentional remembering, intentional connection to cultivate that quality. If you can remember that, if you can remember throwing out your rinse water, you know, that it may nourish beings and wish that they be nourished, that's cultivating that connectivity, that sense of offering something. So this is part of suitability, part of this reflection on clear comprehension of suitability. How do we connect our everyday activities with our purpose? There's another side to suitability, and that is that given our purpose, there may be multiple activities that would be suitable. You know, at least on the surface, they would be suitable. You know, that if you're interested in cultivating your mind and heart, there's many different kinds of practices you can engage in. You can engage in loving kindness practice. You can engage in mindfulness practice, concentration practice, open awareness practice. There's lots of different ways you could engage in mandala practice. I mean, there's lots of different practices to engage in. Suitability also asks us to look at what's happening right now and what's a skillful approach given our circumstances, given our situation. So, for example, if you are finding anger arising in your heart, it's skillful to be mindful of that, to turn your attention towards it as opposed to kind of connecting with the thing you're angry with. Turning your attention towards the anger itself would be a suitable practice, could be a suitable practice. And yet, at times, we might find that perhaps the momentum of the anger is way stronger than our capacity for mindfulness in that moment. Maybe we didn't get much sleep last night, and we're having a conversation with our boss, and anger arises, and we're really sleepy, and it's like, okay, you know, can't really just be mindful of this anger. Might be helpful to use another practice at that point. Change your focus to reflecting on perhaps, if there's this conversation happening between you, reflecting on, you know, what's going on with the other person? You know, maybe they're struggling right now. Just shifting the focus from the internal aspect of anger to kind of a compassion focus. Or perhaps it might be possible for you to just turn your attention to something else. So this is about looking at what's happening in your mind, in your situation in this moment, and what's suitable for you in this moment. Sometimes when we're practicing, we get this idea of, I'm supposed to be able to do it this way. I'm supposed to be able to bring mindfulness to whatever's arising. We can't bring mindfulness to whatever's arising all the time. Our minds just don't work that way. And so learning some skillful means for how to navigate our practice when things get difficult. Turning to other experience, cultivating other qualities, bringing metta in, lots of different opportunities. So it takes learning your mind to engage with this practice of suitability. Then there's a clear comprehension of domain, which the word domain is translating a word that basically means pasture, field. I learned from Gil last week that it basically means where the cows go. That term, gochara, basically means where the cows go. So it's got this notion of a field or a pasture. And as Gil pointed out, where the cows go is where they get nourished. You know, they go for their food there, their nourishment, their support. So the domain is what will support us, that place where we can be. The other aspect of the field, too, I think, it's not only the place where we're nourished, but it's the place where there's some safety. So where is it that we can be nourished and safe? The understanding around this is that the domain of our practice, the domain of our clear comprehension, is the domain of our meditation. So there's different ways of understanding this. The texts talk about not abandoning your subject of meditation as being this clear comprehension of domain. Now, that may sound kind of heavy. You know, how do we not abandon our subject of meditation in our daily life? You know, am I supposed to be with my breath all day long? This requires some suitability as well, understanding suitability. So when we're perhaps sitting in meditation, we perhaps have chosen, I'm going to be attentive to my breath right now. So the domain of my practice for that time would be attending to the breath, perhaps. In our daily lives, our domain becomes mindfulness of our experience. When we're mindful of our experience, we have the nourishment of meeting our experience as it happens, and the nourishment of non-reactivity, that this mindfulness supports a non-reactivity, the nourishment of some level of ease around what's happening, and the safety of the non-reactivity. So pretty much in our daily lives, anything can be our domain. Any experience can be our domain. We can bring our mindfulness to anything that's happening. Now, it's not that anything that happens is our domain. You know, if we're lost in a rampage in our mind of anger, that's not a safe domain. That's not a nourishing domain. It's feeding the anger. It's encouraging the reactivity. It's not that place of safety. It's possible to that rampage of anger that we can wake up into mindfulness in that anger and then become aware, anger is happening right now. Anger is like this. That would be our domain. The recognition of what's happening in the moment as a phenomenon, essentially. There's one place where the definition, actually the clearest definition, one of the clearest definitions of of clear comprehension is given as one recognizes, one's clearly aware of feelings as they arise, as they persist, as they vanish. One's clearly aware of thoughts as they arise, as they persist, as they vanish. One is clearly aware of perceptions as they arise, as they persist, as they vanish. So this is offering the place of the domain of our practice being noticing experience as it arises, as it persists, as it vanishes. From that perspective, anger is arising, anger is persisting. If we're lucky, anger is vanishing. So we see it as a phenomenon, as a process in our minds, as opposed to needing to do something about it, having to get back at somebody or fix something or change something. It's more understood as a phenomenon, as a process. Now, I'm not saying that there are not times to take action. Sometimes this a reflection on looking at things as they arise, as they persist, as they vanish, is interpreted as we just sit here and watch things kind of pass by us and we don't do anything. Well, I think clear comprehension, this teaching on clear comprehension, actually encourages us to act. But it encourages us to act not out of reactivity, but more out of wisdom, out of understanding. So that when anger is arising, we may recognize, okay, there's something here. You know, anger is a signal often that something's off for us. There may be something that we're afraid of, and it's manifesting as anger. And that fear, perhaps, there's something perhaps that needs to happen. Maybe, you know, if you're in an abusive relationship, you know, there's anger at the abuser. It's not clearly comprehending to just sit there and let that person abuse you. Clear comprehension would not necessarily lash out at that person, but would take some skillful action, perhaps to get yourself out of the situation somehow. So the clear comprehension does bring in this sense of acting, but acting from wisdom rather than from reactivity. Acting from love, from compassion, from balance of mind. Seeing something happening, knowing that something needs to happen. You know, an example, you know, I was with my family at one Thanksgiving, and my nephew was very young at the time. He was about 2 years old, and he was learning to run. He was really enjoying running. And it was Thanksgiving or Christmas, I don't remember actually. It was one of those holidays. It was cold outside, so we were indoors, and he was running indoors. And he had discovered this loop in the house. You know, the doors could be open and he could run in a circle. And he could run in a circle all day long. And he did. He ran in a circle. A lot of running. And one day we were all sitting at the table having our meal and he was running in circles. And as he went into the living room, he headed right towards the fireplace. And I mean, I had been watching him, you know, he would veer off most times and just go in that circle, but this time he ran right towards the fire. And I saw this, and out of my being welled up, "Stop!" You know, that wasn't out of... There probably was some fear there, but it was also out of compassion and care that welled up. You know, so that there are times when we can act, have that strong sense of acting, that strong energy to act that comes from love, from compassion. It's like, no, don't go there. So our domain of our practice is what's happening seen from the perspective of non-reactive awareness and wisdom to understand when to act out of compassion, out of kindness, out of balance of mind. The fourth kind of clear comprehension, the clear comprehension of reality, clear comprehension of non-delusion, is really the domain of insight. That these first three kinds of clear comprehension, understanding our purpose, engaging from our purpose, understanding how our actions are suitable with that purpose, engaging with the domain of our practice, being aware in the moment, moment to moment, as best we can. Those three together provide the ground for insight to arise. The insight into impermanence, into how unreliable the things that we typically think of finding happiness in. You know, we typically think of finding happiness in sense pleasure and having things and having identities and being someone and having people praise us, having people have a certain opinion of us. You know, all of these things are really unreliable. So the seeing into that unreliability is also an aspect of this insight. We begin to recognize pinning our hopes for happiness on these things is not going to work that well. And then the understanding of what we typically think of as I or me or mine, I, you know, this person, this being, is not what we think it is. It's a process. There's something happening here. There's an experience unfolding here, kind of like a tree grows and the tree unfolds. I mean, there's not a being in the tree directing the tree growing. It's conditions. It's causes and conditions. There's a seed that falls. There's water that lands on the soil and soil that the sprout takes root in and nourishment that the root gets from the soil and the tree grows. Nature makes that tree grow. There's not a being in that tree creating the tree. Likewise with the unfolding of our being, there's an unfolding process happening, but not an I, a self, that makes it happen. This is the third key insight that the first three kinds of clear comprehensions kind of set the stage for. Now, you might think that, having insight is the domain of sitting silently with your eyes closed, maybe on retreat, long retreat especially, and that insight in daily life, how can that really happen? When we're engaged in daily life practice, when we're engaged with exploring, investigating our mind states, our confusion, our fear, our frustration, our impatience, when we're engaged with that, very deep insights can happen in daily life. We can deeply see into how our mind puts something together, how our mind creates the suffering of that state of impatience or frustration or anger or pride or whatever it is. We can see into that. I've had this kind of experience in my daily life practice. Just watching my experience and seeing a thought arise and recognizing how that thought is hooked to so many other thoughts and it just tends to propel me, that direction is tending to propel me into a habit where suffering will result. And in seeing that unfold, the mind just can begin to let go of those habits. This can happen in daily life. So the clear comprehension of reality, of non-delusion, can be part of our daily life practice. It's not something that we do. We don't go around saying, I'm going to understand not self today. It's more of a recognition that comes through the practice. We bring our attention to our experience, and these insights come. They are revealed to us. We engage. There's a teaching, the Bahiya Sutta, where the Buddha is instructing Bahiya, an ascetic. And basically, here's your practice, Bahiya. Practice in the seen is only the seen, and the heard is only the heard, and the sensed is only the sensed, and the cognized is only the cognized. Train that way. Basically, he's saying, train with the domain of clear comprehension of domain, and just notice experience as it comes and goes. Notice this arising and passing of experience without adding filters, judgments, opinions, views, just noticing. In the seen is only the seen. Training that way. Beginning to recognize when we add judgments, opinions, views, ideas, reactions. And then the Buddha goes on, when for you, in the seen is only the seen, and the heard is only the heard, and the sensed is only the sensed, and the cognized is only the cognized. When that understanding happens for you, he says, then there's no you in terms of that. When there's no you in terms of that, there's no you there. When there's no you there, you are neither here, nor there, nor between the two. This is the end of suffering. So he points to it as, you know, just do the practice. The understanding will come. We don't have to figure it out. We don't even have to believe it. And it's 9:00, so I need to stop. So thank you for your attention.